Hello and welcome to the quarterly Kira Marbach podcast. You know, Mark, this is now our fifth or sixth show I think we've done. And I'll take all the blame, but we still haven't come up with a catchy name like I promised in episode one, so I'll keep working at that. For this show, we're going to have a little different format. Kira Marbach's Chief Investment Officer, Mark Foster, will still join us with his usual equity market commentary. But then we're going to switch gears a little and have Maggie Kamen join us to dive a little deeper into bonds, and really specifically how they perform in changing interest rate environments. As a side note, you will also notice we touch on a similar topic in this quarter's client letter. So let's kick it off first with Mark in the Markets. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
You know, Mark, as we look back, quarter one appeared to have a lot of newsworthy market headlines when you think about the meme stocks, congressional hearings, Biden bucks, vaccines and reopening, the biggest one probably being the question about interest rates and the aggressive rise. Heck, it makes the inauguration seem like it was last year. That's a lot to digest. What do you make of all of it?
Well, equity markets continued to move higher in the first quarter. The S&P rose a little over 6%. Kira Marbach portfolios had a strong quarter, and we significantly outperformed the market. As was the case in the fourth quarter, value outperformed growth as the opening economy has put more focus on recovery, whereas prior quarters were more focused on the pandemic and those companies that benefited most from a closed economy, more specifically those technology companies. So it's been a good start to the year. So, Zach, you mentioned earlier we've seen a move up in interest rates. You know, since the summer of last year, the 20-year Treasury bond has gone from roughly 1% to 2.2% today. That's a major move, albeit from very low levels.
Just to jump in real quick, what's causing the rise in interest rates, and what, if any, are implications for the equity markets?
I think there's a handful of reasons for that. First off, economic recovery. The economy is getting stronger, states are beginning to open up, and business is normalizing. This increasing demand for money puts upward pressure on rates. Second, there's been massive government spending. So far, lawmakers have enacted six major bills costing about $5.3 trillion, and they don't appear to be finished. Much of this will impact the next few quarters and will accelerate the already expanding economy. Additionally, inflation expectations are moving higher. This massive spending has led many to believe that inflation will be on the rise. This impacts bond investors who will demand a higher rate as inflation rises. And then finally, commodity prices have all moved higher as this reflation trade has taken hold. If you look at corn, lumber, copper, almost all commodity prices have jumped, which adds to the inflation scare. The Federal Reserve has reiterated they expect to keep rates low until the economy recovers, even if inflation rises above their 2% threshold. But the Fed can only control the short end of the yield curve, which is why we have seen longer maturities rise while short rates have held steady. Most recessions and major stock market declines are caused by the Fed over-tightening. This cycle, that hasn't even begun, so equity markets shouldn't have to worry about that for a while. And while rates have risen off their lows, they are still low by historical standards.
You know, earlier you touched on Kira Marbach's strong quarter and the value outperformance of growth. Can you discuss how the rising interest rate environment has been a tailwind for value investors?
Yeah, so here's how that works. Over the last several years, there's been a proliferation of fast-growing companies that are unprofitable and are burning cash. They survive by issuing debt and/or equity to raise money to keep the business going and growing. This is very easy to do when rates are near zero. As rates rise, these financings become more expensive, and investors start to demand profit over growth. Of the 1,500 largest companies, 200 weren't profitable at any point in the last 3 years. Conversely, most value names are solidly profitable. They just aren't growing as fast. The NASDAQ index tends to have more of these higher valuation, fast-growing companies. And if you look at a chart of the NASDAQ versus interest rates since rates started to rise last summer, they've moved inversely. So if rates are going up, the NASDAQ's going down and vice versa. Now, higher rates aren't the sole reason for this shift from growth to value, but it's been a big contributor. The economy opening up and stronger earnings growth from companies hurt by the lockdowns has helped as well. You know, the other major implication of higher rates is the overall credit worthiness of the U.S. It's one thing to pile on debt when rates are zero, but that calculation changes dramatically when rates start to rise, so we'll be watching that closely as well. So in summary, while we think there will be upward pressure on rates, we don't think that that poses a significant risk for stock prices at this point. Economic growth should be very strong for the next couple of quarters, but there will likely be some offsets as taxes rise and regulations increase. The market is close to all-time highs, but we're still finding attractive names to invest in, and we remain excited about the prospects for our portfolios.
Thanks for the update, Mark, and an explanation on the markets. Sounds like there are strong tailwinds in the markets, and specifically Kira Marbach's value strategy, that are beginning to pick up, and I look forward to watching it all play out. Let's keep the momentum going. Now to switch gears, let's welcome Maggie to the show to discuss the bond markets.
Hey, Zach. Thanks for having me.
Maggie, I'm glad you're able to join us on today's podcast. Often on this podcast, we focus on equities, but we also recognize that here at Kira Marbach, we have a good portion of our clients who also hold bonds, really for a hedge against equity volatility and also to have reoccurring income. Simply put, a safer investment than stocks that provides some income. But with the changes in the interest rates, that might not be as straightforward, is it?
Yeah, you know, I think that there's this common perception among many investors that bonds represent the safe part of a balanced portfolio and that stocks are risky, or you could say that one is boring and one is fun, saying you almost made 900% in a month before losing it all, owning stock in what some may call a dying video game store, is a lot more fun than saying you're getting a 2% semi-annual coupon payment over the next 10 years. And historically, I would say that that's been true. Bonds are less volatile than stocks over the long term. But that's not to say that they're without risk, and I think that that's what's becoming more and more evident over these past few months.
Great point. It's easy to think about bonds as the turtle in the old turtle and a hare story. But that's not always the case, it sounds like. What we have not really experienced in the past 40 years is a secular rise in interest rates. And so that changes how bonds react. But before we dive too far into the depths of bonds and interest rates, would you mind taking a second to give us a bond 101 primer?
Sure. There's definitely an added layer of complexity that can cause some confusion because bonds can be bought and sold on the secondary market. So I think you're right that it's good to start from the basics. So bonds 101, here you go. What makes a bond a bond? Governments, corporations, and municipalities issue bonds when they need capital. It's a loan that the bond holder makes to the bond issuer. I like to tell people to think of it as an IOU. So similar to a loan, a bond pays interest periodically, these are called coupons, and then repays the principal at the stated time called the maturity. The coupon amount, the timing of the coupon payments, and the maturity are all set from when the bond is issued, which is why you sometimes hear bonds referred to as fixed income investments. So a quick example, a corporation wants to build a new plant for $1 million and wants to issue a bond offering to help pay for the plant. They decide to sell 1,000 bonds for $1,000 each with an annual coupon of 5% maturing in 5 years. If I decide to purchase one of these bonds, I will give $1,000 to the corporation in exchange for $25 twice a year or $50 yearly for the next 5 years. And then at the end of the 5 years, I get my $1,000 back. So that might seem pretty straightforward and boring, but obviously we wouldn't be having this conversation today if that were the case.
Thanks for the Bond 101 primer. Just a good little background to have. So let's get back to the original point about bonds and their risk.
Yeah, so the most common and easiest to understand is credit risk. So credit risk is just the possibility that the company or the government entity that issued the bond will default and be unable to pay back your principal or make your coupon payments. So that's why bonds get rated, and a credit analysis just determines whether you're being paid enough to compensate you for the risk that the issuer will default. So the higher the credit risk, the higher the interest rate you should demand in exchange for the loan.
That seems pretty straightforward. If you lend someone money, there's always the risk of them not paying you back. The reason interest or a yield is charged is because the investor is taking on the risk of the borrower defaulting.
Exactly. And then the more complex risk is interest rate risk. So I mentioned before that bonds trade on the secondary market. This just means that previously issued bonds can trade at either a premium or a discount to their face value based on how market interest rates change relative to the bond's coupon rate. So you'll often hear that there's an inverse relationship between interest rates and bond prices. As interest rates increase, bond prices fall, and vice versa. As interest rates fall, bond prices rise. This is because as market interest rates decrease, the coupon rates offered on new bond issues will also decrease. That makes the higher coupon rates on old bonds more attractive, and as a result, the price investors are willing to pay for older bonds increases. I would pay more to own a bond that pays a 5% coupon than I would for one that pays a 3% coupon. And like you said before, rates have been on this downward slope for almost 40 years now, with the 10-year U.S. Treasury bond yield going from almost 16% in 1981 all the way down to 0.9% at the end of 2020. So this has provided a mostly uninterrupted bull market for the past four decades to fixed income investors. But as both you and Mark have mentioned, there's been a significant move up in rates over the past few months. The 10-year yield's gone from 0.9% at the end of 2020 to 1.7% at the end of Q1. And this means that when bond investors open up their Q1 statements, they're likely to see something that they're not used to seeing, negative quote-unquote performance, reflecting the fact that if they were to sell their bonds today, prior to the maturity date, they would end up receiving less than what they paid for their bond.
So essentially what I'm hearing is that if I paid $100 for a bond that pays 3% yield last year, and today that exact same company issues the exact same terms, but is paying 5% yield, and they're selling that for $100, I'm probably not selling my 3%er for $100 anymore, but for some amount less. Even though if I hold that bond until maturity, I get my $100 back, the market price might not reflect that same $100 I paid for it. Makes sense to me.
Right, and that's where it can get confusing. So you can see negative performance in your fixed income statement, which, like I mentioned, means that if you sold it today, you'd get back less than what you originally paid, but that will only hold true if you sell today and don't hold until maturity.
Great, thanks for the clarity. So we talked about the credit risk and interest rate risk being the two biggest risks for bond investors. How can an investor mitigate those risks?
There's a couple of things to think about when it comes to mitigating risk in bond investing. So the first is called laddering. A bond ladder is a portfolio of bonds that mature in consecutive calendar years, and then you reinvest the proceeds from maturing principal in new bonds that extend the ladder out another year. So for example, a 3-year bond ladder has bonds that mature in 1, 2, and 3 years, and then at the end of year one, when the first bond comes due, the investor takes the proceeds from the matured 1-year bond and reinvests those into a new 3-year bond. So then the portfolio always has 1, 2, and 3-year maturities in it. Bond ladders just help manage the uncertainty of future interest rates because the proceeds are continually being reinvested in new bonds that are issued at current interest rates. And then the second is diversification. So same as it is with stock investments, diversification's your friend. However, building a diversified portfolio of individual bonds requires a significant amount of wealth and expertise. So another option for investors to diversify is with bond mutual funds or exchange-traded funds. And then finally, you can use your portfolio's duration to try to minimize interest rate risk. So without getting too much in the weeds with the mechanics of it, a bond's duration just rolls up several bond characteristics such as maturity date and the coupon payments into a single number to give an indication of how sensitive a bond's price is to interest rate changes. For example, if rates were to rise 1%, a bond or bond fund that has a 5-year average duration would likely lose approximately 5% of its value. So generally, bonds with longer maturities and lower coupons have the longest durations. These bonds are more sensitive to a change in market interest rates, and because of that, are more volatile in a changing rate environment. And then on the other hand, bonds with shorter maturities and higher coupons have a shorter duration and are less sensitive to changing rates.
So thinking about laddering and diversification and being conscious of duration, what does Kieran Marbach do to mitigate some of these risks?
Yeah, you know, we kind of try to do all of the above. So in 2019, we started using Invesco's Bullet Shares product in our fixed income portfolio, which are just defined maturity bond ETFs or exchange-traded funds. We prefer these to a conventional bond fund that doesn't have a maturity date because that leaves the bond fund investor fully exposed to the possibility of falling prices. Instead, in a defined maturity bond ETF like the Bullet Shares, similar to an individual bond, the investor is able to hold that asset to maturity and receive a final distribution at maturity. And then on top of that, these ETFs hold hundreds of individual bonds, which provides us more diversification than we could ever get with individual bonds and helps us reduce credit risk. And then to help manage interest rate risk, we build shorter-term bond ladders in our client portfolios, and we try to keep the duration of the portfolio around 3. So by keeping the maturity shorter, we minimize exposure to interest rate fluctuations, and we make sure our clients always have sufficient liquidity to meet their cash needs.
Boy, Maggie, that was a great in-depth look at bonds. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk us through that. You know, talking about the risks investors take, how Kira Marbach is able to mitigate those risks. I'm glad we're able to spend some time on such a complex topic. The only item I'd like to include is just to remind listeners that you can also find a further discussion on bonds in our quarterly letter and also found in the Indianapolis Business Journal April edition. I'd also just want to point out that if there's any clients out there that want to talk in more depth about the bonds and how they fit in their portfolio, the client service team at Kira Marbach's here to talk through with you. Thanks for listening. Look forward to catching up with everybody next time.